So as I start and share some reflections with you, and I will encourage you to follow with me in Daniel chapter 6. We'll look through, talk through the whole of the chapter. And before you fall asleep, I hope that I won't detain you too long. But I want to share with you first something that was brought to my attention. Maybe you've seen this as well. It's been in various news publishing houses and so on, and I don't think that I've got here the one that I got sent before, but it's the same kind of thing that just a matter of days, a few weeks ago, it was reported that, at least this title, Christianity on the Brink, China bans selling Bibles in new crackdown. And the article goes on to explain that, China has removed sales of the Bible from the country's largest online retail stores. It had previously only allowed the Bible, the Holy Book, to be distributed and printed by state-sanctioned churches. But in recent years, it has been available to buy online at some of the world's largest online stores. But now searches for Holy Bible on JD.com, one of the largest online retailers in China, didn't return any results, while those on Amazon.cn didn't include the main text, but did include study guides and the Quran. My point of reference here is we know, maybe you don't, but China has for a long time controlled the influence and spread of Christianity and the access of scripture and the Bible in the country. And obviously in this day and age, and everyone can go online, including many people in China, the government is putting a restriction there. So it has got me thinking, because of what I was thinking about sharing with you today, how would you feel if our government said, enough's enough, no more Bibles for sale, and we're going to restrict people's access to other religious activities? We experience quite an open access. I don't think anyone here had to sign any documents or go and see an official or watch for the police standing outside the front doors as we came into the building today, did we? No. So how would you feel if you were in a situation where suddenly your spiritual practice was interrupted, was challenged? How would you feel? Daniel chapter 6. We have a very old story then, and one that I think kind of links with what's going on in China, of someone who was challenged in their faith. And for those of you who have got very good eyesight, you can see we've got the script up on the screen as well. But follow on your devices or your Bibles as well. As we look through this Daniel chapter 6, as I have it translated, it reads like this. Darius the Mede decided to divide the kingdom into 120 provinces, and he appointed a high officer to rule over each province. So how many high officers would there have been? 120. Nice simple mathematics for a Sabbath morning, okay? 120 provinces, and he's appointed a high officer to rule over each province. The king also chose Daniel and two others as administrators to supervise the high officers. So how many does that make altogether? Daniel, two other people, 120. How many does that make? 1, 2, 3, 123, okay. Now, why Daniel? Well, let's not labour it too much, but let's just dip into the previous chapter, because we have a previous king, Belshazzar, and Daniel has been doing very well with this previous king as well. And the story there, again, we'll come back to this maybe one other day, but there we have a story of the king, and he sees some writing on the wall during a kind of party, kind of festivities, and it scares the life out of him. And he asks, what does this mean? And it's Daniel that comes to the rescue and says, look, this is what it means. But it's not good news, king. And then interestingly, Daniel chapter 5, verse 29, it says, Then at Belshazzar's command, Daniel was dressed in purple robes, a gold chain was hung around his neck, and he was proclaimed the third highest ruler in the kingdom. So already with the previous king, Daniel was way up there. He had been working his way up through the ranks, if we read the previous chapters as well. Verse 30 of Daniel 5, that very night Belshazzar, the Babylonian king, was killed, and Darius the Mede took over the kingdom at the age of 62. So, Daniel had been doing well for himself. People will have known how well Daniel had been working up through the ranks and so on. So it's no surprise then that this new king, Darius, was looking around and he says, okay, you, I want you in charge. And you, you do this. You, 120 times. You lot are looking after the provinces. Anything problematic with the story so far? No. It's setting the scene. But then, just to finish the sentence at the end of verse 2, which I, in reading it and rereading it, realizing that this is such a key point in the whole story that I'd never really realized before. Okay, let's read verse 2 again. The king also chose Daniel and two others as administrators to supervise the high offices. So supervisors was part of their job. And what does your Bible say? What's it say there on the screen? And fourth line down. Protect the king's interests. That was Daniel's job. To protect the king's interests. Let's see how well he does. Daniel soon proved himself more capable than all the other administrators and high officers, all the other 122. Because of Daniel's great ability, the king made plans to place him over the entire empire. Talk about a job promotion. Now, there's the king, and then after the king is that's the king's intention, is to make Daniel in charge of everyone else. So how do you feel when someone else gets a promotion? And maybe you'd like to have done that job too. A bit disappointing, is it? Maybe a bit jealous? Verse 4, then the other administrators and high officers began searching for some fault in the way Daniel was handling government affairs. Why? Why do you think they started searching for faults in Daniel? We see this as jealousy. And we see this in campaigns for either our own country's elections, or maybe even more so, it's more about the person when it comes to American president. What dirt can we dig up about them that might affect their eligibility of being someone that's entitled to this job? So they start trying to dig up the dirt, but they can't find anything to criticize or condemn him. He was faithful, and get this little sequence, he was faithful, always responsible, and completely trustworthy. And I have to think about myself. And I think, if someone else tried to dig up the dirt on me, would I be found in the sight of God to be faithful, responsible, and completely trustworthy? Doesn't matter what job any of us does in our place of employment. Could it be said from others that you are faithful, responsible, and completely trustworthy? It has an important effect on what happens later. So they conclude, our only chance of finding grounds of accusing Daniel will be in connection with the rules of his religion. If we can't get him because he's a good guy, we'll try and find some reason to catch him out. We haven't caught him out yet, but we'll try and find some way of catching him out because of his faith. So the story starts unwrapping. Normally this is a kid's story, yeah? We don't really talk about this bit so far with the kid's story. Well, maybe touching on it a bit. But so the administrators and high officers went to the king and said, long live King Darius. What was their role and responsibility? These administrators and high officers. The high officers were to look after the 120 provinces. And the other two administrators was to do what? To look after the king's interests, not their own. Long live King Darius. We are all in agreement. We administrators, well, all but one of them, officers, high officers, advisors, and governors, that the king should make a law that will be strictly enforced. Give orders that for 30 days, they really wanted to drag this one out, didn't they? For 30 days, any person who prays to anyone, divine or human, except you, your majesty, will be thrown into the den of lions. They already had the consequence worked out. And anyone thrown into the lions, they're just not going to live. They're not going to survive. We don't need to do anything. It was the animals. We have an interest in you, O great and majestic king. And we have an interest in everything about you, and we think that you are worthy of people's honor. So, O great and wonderful king, why don't you make a law that no one can worship, no one can pray to anyone but you? What was the motivation for this rule? We're going to catch Daniel out. Because if we can't catch him out, then it means that he's failing in his faith relationship with his God. Well, the king seems to be flattered by their comments in verse 8. And now, Majesty, issue and sign this law so it cannot be changed, an official law of the Medes and Persians that cannot be revoked. So King Darius signed the law. That sounds nice. Can you imagine the king thinking, ooh, we all like a little bit of flattery, a little bit of compliments, don't we? And the king, and it's not unusual in those days that the rulers were thought of as some kind of deity. And, I like the sound of that. They really are looking after me, aren't they? So the king makes the rule. Verse 10, but when Daniel learned that the law had been signed, what did he do? What did he do? What would you do if you were Daniel? What would you do if you're at work and you suddenly get that email? What? A law has been made that says this? Daniel knew immediately the implications. But what does Daniel do? He says, it went home and knelt down, as usual, in his upstairs room, with its windows open toward Jerusalem. What did that law say that no one should do? The law said, no prayers to anyone other than the king, King Darius. What does Daniel go out and do straight away? Daniel goes out and prays to his God. Nothing, no law, no regulation, whether it's the government and of the Medes and Persians or the Chinese government or whoever, no one is going to stop Daniel from praying to his God, as he usually did. So there's another little lesson for us. What is our usual practice in our day-to-day living? And how would our usual practice affect people looking at us, thinking that we are faithful, responsible, and completely trustworthy? Daniel is faithful and responsible and completely trustworthy in his faith relationship with God. And even a law of the Medes and Persians will not stop Daniel from going, as usual, opening up his shutters, looking out that window towards Jerusalem, the place that he had been exiled from. You know, he was a refugee. It's something that's very topical at the moment and has been for a while, whether it's people from southeast or southwest from us. He was the foreigner in a foreign land, but he'd done well, and he'd worked hard, and he was faithful to the people that employed him, and nothing was going to stop him from worshipping and praying to his God. He prayed 3 times a day, just as he had always done, giving thanks to his God. What would you pray about? If you just heard that there is this law that means that I shouldn't pray to anyone else, would you go and pray in a kind of public way? Not out in public, but he was it within sight. Would you find it maybe, let's just kind of go inside the house a little bit. Find my own closet and hide away so no one knows? Or would you be bold like Daniel and say, okay, but I'm not going to change my way because God is that important to me? What would you pray about? Giving thanks to his God. Wow. I don't know if I would be too thankful. That's a bit of a difficult situation, isn't it? Persecution. Being restricted in the way that you can exercise your faith. What is there to be thankful for? But Daniel gives thanks to God. So they went straight to the king and reminded him about the law. Did you not say, sign a law that for the next 30 days, any person who prays to anyone, divine or human, except you, your majesty, will be thrown into the den of lions? Yes, the king replied. That decision stands. It is an official law of the Medes and Persians that cannot be revoked. Then they told the king, that man Daniel, one of the captives from Judah, is ignoring you and your law. He still prays to his God 3 times a day. What's interesting about this story and this point, this detail? Did they go straight away the first time that Daniel prayed? No. Already says that Daniel went straight away to his window And he prayed 3 times a day like he usually did. They waited. They didn't go the first time they saw him. They didn't go the second time. They go when they've established that he is not going to change his way. I wonder about Daniel and how much he might have known. There in that window, maybe he saw people at the corner of his eye coming to look to see if he was doing what he said he would normally do, whether he would be faithful to his God. Are we faithful to God, whether people are watching or not watching? You know, they say that integrity is who you are when no one is watching. Do we have that integrity of faith that we will come to God no matter what? Hopefully in full sight of other people. Because how will they know about the God that we serve unless we tell them? How would King Darius know about the God that Daniel served unless Daniel told him? So, at last the king gave orders. In the evening, where did I get to? 3 times a day. Hearing this, the king was deeply troubled. This is verse 14. And he tried to think of ways to save Daniel. Why would he have thought of ways to save Daniel? Because Daniel was valuable to him. He knew that Daniel looked out for his interests. The pennies suddenly dropped with the king. They've tricked me. They're not actually looking out for me. This 122, plus probably some others, they're not looking out for me, but Daniel did, and Daniel does. The king is trying to work out, how can I solve this situation? He spent the rest of the day looking for a way to get Daniel out of this predicament. In the evening, the men went together to the king and said, "Your Majesty, you know that according to the laws of the Medes and Persians, no law that the king signs can be changed." They've painted the king into the corner, and they have no fear of going before the king and saying, "You can't change your mind. Nothing you can do about it. You've done it now, king." The gall, the audacity of these people. So at last, the king gave orders for Daniel to be arrested and thrown into the den of lions. The king said to him, and this is where I read this and I realize that Daniel must have talked to the king about the God that he served. Otherwise, why would Darius say this? "May your God, whom you serve so faithfully, rescue you." Wow. Someone, a king, who doesn't serve God, but sees the importance of God in Daniel's life, struggling to find a way out to resolve the situation, can't. He's painted into this corner, but he says to Daniel, "Your God, may your God save you. May your God rescue you." But then the king does something. He says, "May your God rescue you." But what happens next? What happens next is something happens that means that no human can rescue them. No human can do anything now, other than everyone knowing about it and breaking seals and laws and so on. No human can do anything about Daniel's predicament. Only a God that Daniel served. The stone was brought, placed in the mouth of the den. The king sealed the stone with his own royal seal and the seals of his nobles, so that no one could rescue Daniel. So that no one could rescue Daniel. What was it the king said to Daniel? "May your God rescue you." And then the king does something that means no one can rescue you. We might find ourselves in a difficult position. No one's going to rescue us. It's down to God. If it's down to God, then when can he find in us faithfulness, responsibility, and complete trustworthiness. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night fasting. Well, let's not labour this too much, but fasting is stopping doing one thing in order to do another. What other thing was he doing other than contemplating this, the plight of Daniel? And fasting is sometimes associated with worship, that we stop one thing in order to worship our God. I'm not going to overemphasize the potential there, but the king is fasting. He's stopping doing. He's worried about the situation because he values Daniel. He refused his usual entertainment and couldn't sleep at all that night. Very early in the next morning, he got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he got there, he called out in anguish. He hasn't broken the seals. He hasn't moved this stone away yet, because he knows that that's all complete. So it hasn't moved. No human has been able to rescue Daniel. But what does the king do? What does he say? Daniel, servant of the living God, was your God, whom you serve so faithfully, able to rescue you from the lions? What was Daniel's answer? Long live the king. What was Daniel's responsibility? To serve the interests of the king. He wasn't even from that country. But he served the interests of the king because that was his job. And he was committed to it. He was faithful in everything that he did. Long live the king. My God sent an angel to shut the lion's mouths so that they would not hurt me. For I have been found innocent in his sight. And I have not wronged you, Your Majesty. I've done my job, Your Majesty. I have been faithful to you, Your Majesty. My God has looked after me, Your Majesty. The king was overjoyed and ordered that Daniel be lifted from the den. Not a scratch was found on him, for he had trusted in his God. Then the king gave orders to arrest the men who had maliciously accused Daniel. He had them thrown into the lion's den along with the wives and children. The lions leapt on them and tore them apart before they even hit the floor of the den. The king Darius sent this message to the people of every race and nation and language throughout the world. He was an important king. His kingdom was enormous. What was his message? Peace and prosperity to you. I declare that everyone throughout my kingdom should tremble with fear before the God of Daniel. This is a king that didn't even believe in the God of Daniel. But look at his witness. For he is the living God, and he will endure forever. His kingdom will never be destroyed, and his rule will never end. Well, this has links with what Daniel told a previous king, but well, let's not go into all of that as well. He rescues, this is the God of Daniel, he rescues and saves his people. He performs miraculous signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. What if Daniel was still faithful, but didn't go rushing back home straight away? It didn't go praying in the window 3 times a day like he normally did, in full view of everyone. What if Daniel just thought, I'm going to keep my mouth shut. I'm going to withdraw a little. Because it's easier like that. I'm going to get into less trouble. People aren't going to ask as many questions at work. If Daniel had done that, he wouldn't have had the effect of witness on the king. And the king wouldn't have sent this message to the whole of his kingdom. Now, Jesus was ridiculed when he hung on the cross. And people said, you know, if you're really the Son of God, why don't you come down from there? Jesus could have. Just like Daniel could have withdrawn a little bit. Just been a little bit more discreet. But Daniel knew that his faithfulness was important. And Jesus was there to do a job, and his faithfulness, his love for us, was important. That's why he didn't come down from the cross. He endured that experience, that spiritual death, that separation from God the Father that we each deserve because of our sinfulness. Jesus could have saved himself, but we would not then be saved. Daniel could have saved himself, but the kingdom wouldn't have found out about the God that Daniel served then. It's easy to be discreet about our faith, but that won't benefit other people. Be bold to change lives. I dare you.